Hello, and welcome to the IoT Chat, where we explore the latest developments in the Internet of Things. I'm your host, Christina Cardoza, Editorial Director of Insight.Tech. And it's that time of year again where we're going to look at the top IoT and AI predictions for 2024. And joining us again on this topic, we have Martin Garner and Bola Rodaby from CCS Insights. So for those of you who aren't familiar or didn't get to hear our last podcast with these two experts, let's get to know them a little bit before we jump into the conversation. Bola, I'll start with you. What can you tell us about, you know, what you do at CCS Insight?
I'm the Chief of Enterprise Research at CCS Insight. I have a team that covers software development, workplace transformation, cloud, AI, of course, security, quite a whole load, but everything to do with the enterprise.
Great. And Martin, welcome back to the show. What can you tell us about CCS Insight and yourself?
Thank you, Christina. Well, yes, I've been at CCS Insight for 14 years. I lead the work we do in IoT, mostly focusing on the industrial side, and so work very closely with Bola on those areas.
Great. And Martin, since you've been at the company for, like you said, 14 years now, we've worked a bit over the last couple of years. You know, you guys always have a IoT prediction you put out at the end of the year. And, you know, we've always worked to talk about that and to see what's coming next. So I'm wondering, in the last year or even the last couple of years, there's been a big push to edge and AI, you know, so I'm wondering how that impacted this year's predictions and what we see coming for 2024.
Sure. Well, obviously, 2023 was a huge year for both of those areas. Edge was already growing strongly coming into this year. And, I think 13 months ago, ChatGPT had just launched and has clearly had a massive impact during this year and has really opened the world's eyes to what AI can do and quite a few things that it can't do yet. So I think it's fair to say that the world is now thinking rather differently about the two areas, and we are too. So in our predictions, last year we had lots about edge and some AI. I think for anyone who downloads the booklet at the end of the podcast, you'll see that we've really dialed up the AI predictions this year. And it's important. It's not just generative AI like ChatGPT, and it's not just what individuals can do with AI. And there's one prediction I'd like just to kind of give as a little example of that, which is that by 2028, a major healthcare provider offers its customers a digital twin service that proactively monitors their health. Now, today, there is a lot of data about you scattered around. So we have online health records in many countries. We have fitness bands, we have smartwatches, and they show activities, sleep, and so on. There's lots of data on your phone, but it's all a bit messy and it's not joined up at all. So we think that healthcare providers, over 3 to 4 years, we'll start to combine these sources, we'll use AI, and we'll basically do what the industrial guys are already doing, which is predictive maintenance on people. And of course, the aim is early intervention gives smaller intervention, and it's usually cheaper intervention too. And the outcomes are just better if you get there earlier. So that's an example of how, you know, we think AI will start to develop from here.
Yeah, and I love what you said. You know, we've learned a lot about what we can actually do with AI or what's possible. There's always that hype or that trend that everybody wants to jump on right away. So I want to dig a little bit into that. But before we get there, just this movement to with AI and this movement to edge, you know, and wanting to get information at real time and faster. There's been a lot of move also to the cloud with all of these solutions and applications. And I know there's always that cloud edge, you know, versus on-premise debate. Will that continue, or will people continue to move to the cloud over the next couple of years, or is on-premise still going to, you know, remain steady?
Well, it's a good question. And I think that debate is going to remain live for a good few years. And I want to draw out just a couple of ways of that. So one is quite short term. I think in many countries, there are kind of fears about where the economy is going. We're not quite out of all the pandemic effects yet. So one prediction is that recession fears push workloads from the cloud to on-premises through 2024. Now, the best candidates for that are companies which are using hybrid cloud. It's not so much those who've gone all in on the cloud. And there are a few new initiatives like HPE GreenLake and Dell Apex, which bring the flexible consumption model that we have in the cloud. They bring it to hardware and allow you to do that at the edge as well. So it may be that a hardware refresh in some of those companies is a good opportunity to rationalize some aspects, sort of repatriate some of their workloads to on-premises and take some cost savings while they're doing it. So that's the short term. Longer term, we think there are several areas where there are sort of pendulum swings, like insourcing versus outsourcing, and edge to cloud could be one of those. And it's partly also that there are new tools and different economics coming up in both areas. So it's all changing quite fast. But one area where we have another prediction is that a repricing of cloud providers' edge computing services takes place by the end of 2028. Now, what does that mean, really? Well, the big cloud providers, they all have edge computing services, but actually the public cloud is the big part of the business. And the edge services, they're a sort of on-ramp for the public cloud, and they're priced to do that. But the forecasts for edge computing, they show it growing bigger than the public cloud over 5 years, possibly a lot bigger than the public cloud. Now, if that happens, then we'd be in a position where the big part is subsidized by the smaller part, and that makes no sense at all. So we really expect the edge cloud services, their prices to be moved upwards over 3 to 5 years, and that could be a significant price rise. So we think many industrial companies might want to consider their own edge computing sort of just in case, put themselves in a better position so they have more options. It's edge as a hedge, if you like, and kind of gives them a, you know, more options about how they go forwards.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great point. You know, companies, they don't want to be locked in with a vendor, you know, like you said, more opportunities. They want to make sure any investments they make, because they do make a lot of investments to move to these solutions or to build these. They want to make sure any investments they do make, they can future-proof them. I think a lot of it driving it too is the type of solution that they're building. If it's more critical workload or they need more security, they tend to move on-premise. If they need, you know, real-time analytics or they need faster results, that's sometimes the cloud and the where the edge computing comes in. So I want to talk a little bit about you know, AI development with you, Ebola. You know, what can we expect in terms of the AI solutions or the developments happening over the next year within enterprises?
Well, I think it's a good question actually, because I think we're going to expect quite a lot. And I think whilst 2023 has been kind of a year of we've seen a year of launches, especially from many of the IT solution providers. You know, there's been a wealth of new tools. I mean, obviously, when ChatGPT kind of launched last at the end of November in 2022, it really spawned, you know, massive interest. And we've seen it exponentially grow, especially with generative AI. But I would say that the development of AI has actually been happening for quite some time, because it's been machine learning and various other, you know, sort of models and algorithms that people have used, you know, behind the scenes. So anything that you've been using on your mobile phone to kind of, you know, search through pictures and all those are kind of like, you know, AI solutions, AI models. So this AI itself has, you know, is not new, right? But what we are kind of seeing is the kind of the power of generative AI, especially as we think about the productivity. Yeah, you know, everyone has sort of latched on to the conversational aspect of generative AI and its ability to simplify, you know, even sort of complex, you know, queries and sort of bring back concise, you know, sort of information that is relevant information. So that's, everyone's like jumping on that because they see that as a productivity, you know, solution. So what we're seeing now is a launch of lots and lots of solutions. So over the last year, we've seen pretty much every provider, Intel amongst those, you know, as well, bringing out some generative AI capabilities, as well as beefing up their own AI, you know, solutions. But one of the things that, you know, we've seen, you know, we've seen Microsoft launch with the Copilot, you know, sort of AI powered assistant. We've seen others from other, you know, sort of providers like AWS with Amazon Q. But I think one of the things that we do think is that, despite all this frothiness, as you know, around sort of like the interest, we did have a prediction which actually said AI investment and development, whilst accelerates in 2024, you know, it does accelerate in 2024, despite calls for caution, and we are already seeing the sort of like the throughput of this already. And the reason we see this is that actually quite a few of the main protagonists. I mean, you know, over the recent months have kind of said, well, hold on just a minute. We need to kind of slow this down. Things are moving rather fast. And, you know, people are a bit worried about security. They want, you know, they're worried about whether the regulations are out there, whether they're effective enough. And all of this caution is still kind of like wrapped around. But at the same time, I think there's a real thirst to get AI, to develop it, to really get their hands on it, because people have been kind of like blown away by the kind of new experiences and the engagement levels that they can have, especially with generative AI. So I think there is, you know, there's going to be even more acceleration next year.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot to dig in there. I want to start off with the generative AI piece. And like you mentioned, you know, the possibilities, it brings so many benefits that, you know, a lot of companies are trying to jump on this. And, you know, I always hear in the back of my head, one of our guests on the podcast was saying, you know, you want to create solutions that solve a problem, not create solutions just to create a solution, just to jump on the latest trend. So I'm curious, you know, with generative AI, because obviously we're seeing all of these companies, you know, talk about it, all of these releases and with AI toolkits, adding generative AI capabilities, there's been a lot of hype. What's the reality? You know, what do you think will actually come of this space, you know, in the next year? And what can we be looking for? What are the applications or use cases that are possible?
Oh, gosh, that's lots of questions. Well, first of all, I think there is a lot of froth around with generative AI. But that's because everyone's kind of been, you know, as I said earlier, been blown away by, you know, the sort of productivity and, you know, that they've seen from it. And actually, the intuitiveness of it all and just really being able to talk or put together kind of like just natural language queries and then get back concise information. That said, I mean, one of our predictions that we outlined is that despite all of the, you know, sort of excitement around generative AI and the fact that we'll see lots and lots of new tools, we do think that 2024 will see some level of slowdown, partly because as people kind of get to the grips with the reality of the costs, some of the risks, and, you know, the complexities that, you know, that really, you know, that become, start to be exposed and have been starting to be exposed this year. I think that will see, you know, sort of like a slight slowdown. But despite that, I mean, it's a bit of a thing where you're sort of saying, on one hand, it's going to be really, really great and really fast. On the other hand, we're going to see some slowdown. What I think, as with any technology, there will be kind of like people just trying all sorts of, you know, sort of capabilities. Nowadays, you can go in and you can start, you know, sort of typing in, you know, sort of queries, and then immediately get sort of very, very concise answers back. And what we're also seeing is that we're seeing generative AI in multiple kind of like, you know, sort of perspectives. So we're seeing it as an assistant to kind of providing information, to relevant information across lots and lots of different, you know, data types. We're also seeing it being able to create, you know, generate code that is very good quality, that at least is a starting point for, you know, especially kind of the experts to kind of like, yeah, sort of do, you know, sort of finalize it and sort of do a little bit more quality control. So I think we're going to see, so on one side, I think 2024 is really where people get to start to play with it properly. And the tools, they'll get to start to understand, you know, some of the kind of limitations of the tools, as well as what they're going to be able to, you know, sort of achieve. So I think it's going to be, on one hand, you know, the hype of 2023 will start tempering down into much more of a sort of a more level-headed, you know, sort of approach to it and more nuanced, as well as the excitement of actually delving into sort of some of the sort of capabilities like generated code. We'll start seeing it across different types of workplace, you know, solutions, helping kind of knowledge workers, but also helping expert professionals, whether those be expert developers or, you know, sort of other professions as well.
Yeah, it's interesting because we may see a slowdown in some of the hype or, you know, everybody jumping onto this trend. But like you mentioned, we're going to see an increase and acceleration in AI investments, you know, maybe in other areas. And I like you mentioned that we're going to see an acceleration despite the need to maybe take a slowdown, to take a step back and look how we're developing things. And Martin, I know we've spoken in conversations outside the podcast, you know, that AI oversight committees, you know, this might be something that is coming. So can you talk a little bit more about what that means? How can we develop, or how do you anticipate, you know, ethical AI initiatives to spring up as this investment and this acceleration continues?
Well, yes, of course. And you're right. We touched on it before. It's a big subject and we could talk all day about that. We're not going to. So the short answer is yes, there's going to be a lot more of that. And I think you already said it, Christina, that AI does have the potential for many, many good uses in society, but also used wrongly, it has the potential to do a huge amount of damage. And it's a bit like medicine, where regulated drugs are generally good for society, and unregulated drugs like opioids and fake Wegovy and things, generally not so good. And the big difference with medicine is that there's no professional body, there's no Hippocratic oath, you can't be struck off as an AI practitioner, at least not yet. And so at the moment, instead, we have the opposite, where the AI leading companies, they seem to be on a big push. As soon as something new is developed, they open source it and push it out into the world as fast as possible. And that obviously puts a huge imperative on suppliers and developers to take their own ethical stance in how they use it. You know, which customers are they going to deal with or not deal with? How to train their staff, internal governments? There's lots to get right there. But it also puts an onus on companies who are using AI as customers, and they need to step up too. And so we do have a prediction, which is that AI oversight committees become commonplace in large organizations in this coming year, 2024. And those are likely to be committees of ethics experts, AI experts, legal advisors, data scientists, HR, representative from the different business units, and so on. And they're going to have to review the use of AI across the company and in the company's products. And their job really is to bridge the gap between the tech teams, who are all engineers, they're not typically ethicists, and the organization and its goals and what it wants to do with it. And we think that's going to be quite a significant overhead for a lot of companies, quite difficult to get right. Lots of training to come up to speed and to kind of stay on top of it, because it's all moving so fast that the committee will have to move fast too. And all that because the AI industry is largely not doing a good job of self-regulation.
One thing I'm curious about is, you know, the EU is putting together the AI Act, and I'm wondering, you know, what will this mean for developing solutions with the GDPR? You know, that was in the EU, but that was a global impact. So do you anticipate the same thing happening when the AI Act is passed?
I think probably Bola's the better one to talk on that, if I may. Can I hand that one to Bola? I know you've been looking.
Yeah. yes, I think definitely, actually, because I, you know, at the end of the day, I do think that the regulators are coming together. You know, the EU has been kind of like, you know, first out the door, for starters, with the EU AI Act. But when the Act, you know, does coming, it will be like the GDPR Act. And I think what will happen, and we've already seen the ratification of the Digital Markets Act, and we've already seen the effects of that with, you know, sort of, some of the companies who kind of like are being highlighted are sort of still kind of trying to get bedded in into whether they are the kind of like the main gateways. But I think when it finally does come through, I think there will be kind of a, you know, sort of a bedding in process as people try to get used to it, try to understand, you know, sort of what it, you know, what it means, what are all the constructs, you know, sort of see all of the kind of the rules and regulations. So there will be kind of like teething problems, but I think it will actually, it will become, you know, sort of a thing, a regulation of, you know, sort of for people to rally around. But the EU is not the only one. We've got the acts in the US, and we've also got, you know, the UK pushing to having, you know, a really strong, you know, play with sort of AI regulations. And then we've got, you know, sort of the, you know, sort of China and in other regions as well. So I think we're going to start seeing some level of, improvement in terms of, you know, yes, towards the end of 2024, certainly as people rush out to kind of see the frameworks regulation. And I think that will be really important. The other thing that's actually happening, and it's not just about regulation at the kind of international level, but and the national level, but it's also what the industry is doing. And I think there's some really exciting things that have been happening recently. IBM and Meta and Intel, with part of 50 organizations that have launched the AI Alliance, which is, you know, aimed to sort of bring the industry together to kind of work on, you know, collectively, like any other sort of like, you know, body, to sort of standardize, you know, sort of like working groups, to bring working groups together to come up with ideas for kind of, you know, sort of strategies and approaches to, you know, sort of handling, you know, certain AI kind of like challenges and opportunities, to kind of be the home or the hub, you know, for, you know, sort of interactions between end users as well.
I love seeing all of these AI efforts, especially from big tech companies, because, you know, AI has a lot of benefits. It has a lot of opportunities and ability to transform industries and transform our lives for the better. But there is that level of uncomfortability from end users, how their privacy is going to be used, you know, how their how secure the data is, what's it going to do, how it really is going to transform their lives. So I think this helps put a safeguard and minimize some of the risks that, you know, people think that are out there. You know, and I'm curious because obviously we can't wait for some of these acts or some of these efforts to be passed or to take off before we start developing in a more ethical way. So I'm just curious, Bola, you know, you work with developers. How can they continue to develop these AI solutions with privacy and ethics in mind, you know, and ensure the safety and security of their solutions and of the end users?
Well, I mean, it's a good one, actually, because I think invariably what's going to happen is that I think there's likely to be kind of oversight committees within organizations. That's something that we've actually put down in a prediction of ours. But I think one of the things is that there will be communities, you know, that will, you know, sort of like working within organizations to kind of understand what it is that they can do. Many of the tools that they are actually using now and many of the providers are building in that kind of like, you know, sort of responsible AI, ethical AI from the ground up. What developers have to then start thinking about, and this isn't just on the developers, because actually, you know, at the end of the day, a developer might think, well, actually, I'm building code. I'm generating, I'm building a code. I'm writing an application. But at the same time, in the same way that security is actually down to everyone in that workflow, so is responsibility, you know, responsible AI and an ethical approach. It's down to everyone. So I don't see it's just a developer requirement, but at the same time, you know, you have to kind of like say there needs to be frameworks in place, and that needs to be driven around the whole organization. It needs to come from the ground up. It needs to go from the top down. So that means there needs to be some principles that are used and, you know, sort of distributed and circulated across the organization. And there needs to be some, you know, sort of like, you know, guidelines. Now, the tools are coming with guidelines and guardrails, right, in terms of, okay, how do I prevent certain things happening? Because you can't expect anyone who's always developing to have every, you know, thing in their heads about, oh, okay, is this ethical? Of course, you could ask yourself, well, you know, just because I can do it, should I do it? You know, and that's always the case. But at the same time, if you want a level of consistency, we need to provide those kind of guidelines and to the organization, to the development organization, right across the board. But there needs to be guardrails. And I think many of the tools are recognizing this so that they can actually allow organizations of any size to put their own policies in. So I see going forward that there will be layered approach. So there may be an oversight committee within the organization that thinks about what it is that the organization is, you know, from an ethical standpoint, from a responsibility standpoint, and start building policies. And those policies will be driven and put into the tools so that they act as guardrails. But there's also going to be guidance and training of developers in terms of taking an ethical approach, taking a responsible AI approach. So, you know, I think going forward, you know, it's a bit like, you know, how do you do right, you know, knowing right from wrong? But this is something that the development community already is aware of. There's a lot of things out there, a lot of programs, a lot of initiatives out there, sort of things like, you know, aiming for doing code for good. Lots of organizations have been thinking about impact, about sustainability and all those kind of things. So there is a body, you know, sort of a wealth of kind of already, you know, sort of ideas and initiative to kind of make people think at multiple levels, not just about responsible AI, but doing the right thing, thinking about sustainability. So I think the approach is actually, you know, is already there for many developers, but they do need help.
Yeah, and I love what you said. It's not in, you know, one camp is not responsible for this. It's really a collaborative effort from everybody building it, everybody using these type solutions, everybody touching AI. So I love that. We are running a little bit out of time, but before we go, I just want to change the conversation to a different topic real quickly while I have Martin on the podcast. Because Martin, we've talked, you know, over the last couple of years, we've been talking about 5G, you know, are we looking to 6G? Where are we in the 5G efforts? Is it still the beginning? So I'm just curious, you know, as we're talking about AI and edge, where 5G fits into all of this, what the impact of AI is going to be on sort of 5G networks, and, you know, when is it time to start looking at 6G?
Yeah, 6G, I love that. We don't quite have all the good bits of 5G yet, do we? They're coming, but they're not quite here yet. So, but there is work going on 6G. So in terms of AI and 5G, I think the first thing is that organizations who are starting to use 5G in their factory, in their warehouse, in private networks up and down the country and so on, one of the things 5G will do is enable a lot more use of AI, thanks to the very high capacity, the time-sensitive networking, location services it will bring in. And we'll see a lot more sort of AI in use around those domains, a lot more autonomous vehicles and things. We can already see good examples of autonomous trucks used in mines in Latin America and in ports in many different continents and so on. Lots and lots more of that to come. With 5G and the newer bits of 5G, which are nearly here, as one of the key sort of enablers of that. But I think the other interesting bit is the impact of AI on the network itself. Now, there are several tricky aspects if you try to buy and use 5G. So things like coverage planning on public and private networks, very good candidate for using AI to make that simpler, you know, so that more people can do it. Also, 5G networks, they're complicated things. They really are, very high number of settings and things. And so the whole optimization and management is a big deal in a 5G network. And we have a prediction around that, which is that AI enables 5G networks to move beyond 5.9's availability, which, you know, anyone who's used a cellular network will appreciate the importance of that. And that would come through by analyzing traffic patterns and ensuring that the network is set up best to handle that type of traffic, identify problems, predictive maintenance, and configure the network, you know, if things are going to go wrong, so that it has graceful degradation or even becomes self-healing. And we think there's a lot more that, you know, networks themselves can do with AI to become much better quality and really support not only people up and down the country on the public networks, but also really the OT world, which absolutely, if they use it a lot, they will depend on it. And it'll be very expensive when things go wrong. So, you know, supporting that requires that degree of quality. Anyway, then 6G. It is a tiny bit early for 6G, but work is going on, of course. And over the next 5 years or so, we're going to be building 6G networks. We think 2030 is going to be a bit of a headline year for 6G, and we have a few 6G predictions. Here's one, which is that by 2030, the first 6G-powered massive twinned city is announced. And we think that cities will be a great showcase, and massive twinning is one of the best use cases because all the layers of a city could be potentially included in the model there. And the 6G network could enable a sort of full representation of the whole city environment. We don't think that's likely to start with older cities, much more with a new project such as they're doing in Saudi Arabia at the moment. And if we do that, they're going to need 6G just for the sheer volume and speed of the data in real time that runs through a city. So that was a really good example. And we think 2030, you know, big headline year for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree. You know, we still have to fix or, you know, finish the 5G aspects that we have there. But of course, you have, you know, businesses or companies out there already trying to talk about 6G. You know, and I agree that for all of these AI solutions and benefits and opportunities we want to take advantage of, we need to make sure the infrastructure is there to make it possible first.
Yeah, and so, working as well as it can.
Yeah, absolutely. So this has been a very big conversation. Obviously, there's lots to look forward to. And we have only touched, you know, a little bit of the, you know, the research paper, the CCS Insight IoT predictions that come out every year. We've only touched a small subset, and this has already been such a big conversation. So before we go, you know, I just want to throw it back to you guys. Are there any final thoughts or key takeaways that you want to leave our listeners with today? Bala, I'll start with you.
Well, yes, I think the one thing that I do feel that is going to become even more prominent if people haven't already identified it yet, which is we have a wonderful prediction about this, which is the proficiency in generative AI is a common feature of job adverts for knowledge workers by 2025. And I think it's actually going to be probably that you could stretch that out to, you know, more than knowledge workers, probably for everyone. And the reason we say that is because, you know, the what we've seen, the swathe of recent announcements, you know, sort of for generative AI, you know, we've seen them being embedded into workplace tools such as Microsoft Office, Google Workspace, all of the different types of solutions that are out there. I mean, Martin actually mentioned earlier that pretty much, you know, you now get sort of generative AI capability right across the board. Almost any tool you open up and there's a generative AI, you know, sort of chatbots there. And I think the thing is, what we have data already showing that the more proficient you are, i.e. the better that you are in creating those prompts, which means that you know, if you're trained as well, the better the productivity and the better the quality. And I think people are going to recognize that that is going to be a real factor to having kind of an efficiency factor and an effectiveness factor for, you know, sort of like the workplace, workflows, you know, sort of street, and especially if you're trying to streamline your workflows, make them more effective. So I think that proficiency side is going to be a real big thing. So my advice is to kind of start, you know, sort of looking at, you know, how best to kind of build out those prompts and sort of taking some sort of training support in that. It'll follow the way as many technologies, you know, the better you are with them, the more effective that you can get them to be.
And I think there is already a job title called prompt engineer, isn't there?
I've heard about this. Yes.
What you're saying, Bola, is that that's going to evaporate and everybody's going to have to be good at it.
Yeah, exactly. Good. I mean, prompt engineering is going to be like, well, that's it. Just another engineering. But the thing is that, you know, we can joke about it, but I think really, in the same way that, and it's going to be a little bit more than just being kind of like good at, you know, search terms. I think everybody's going to, you know, have to really, you know, sort of learn how, you know, how best to, you know, sort of to construct your prompts to get the best insights and the best information out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost like the AI developers. You don't really call them AI developers anymore because everyone's developing for AI. Everyone needs to know how to develop for AI. Yeah. So they're just developers. But Martin, anything you want to leave us with today?
No, I think that sort of wrapped it up really quite nicely. Thank you, Christina.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you guys again. It's always a pleasure to have both of you on the podcast. And, you know, it's been a great, insightful conversation. I invite all of our listeners to take a look at the CCS Insight 2024 prediction for IoT. We will host it and make sure that we make a link available to our listeners to check that out. And, you know, I want to thank you guys for listening to the podcast. Until next time, this has been the IoT Chat.